I'm David Schreiner Khan, and this is Smashing the Plateau. No matter how successful you are, there's probably at least one area where roadblocks are keeping you from fully achieving your goals. Fortunately, you've come to the right place. Every expert I interview on this podcast is different, but they all have one thing in common. They know how to fix problems that keep people stuck. Today, I'm pleased to welcome Vivek Tiwari. Vivek is a New York Times best-selling, Eisner Award-winning author, both the book and the film adaptation of The Fifth Beatle. He is a Tony Award-winning producer of Broadway shows, film, television, and graphic novels. He's done a lot of other very interesting things in his life, both in the business world and in the creative world, and it's my pleasure to welcome Vivek to the show.
Thank you so much. It's nice to be on.
Vivek, tell us a little bit about how you ended up positioning yourself at the intersection of business and arts.
Well, you know, I've always loved the arts. I grew up in New York City, and I was exposed to the arts ever since I was a little kid. My parents didn't work in the arts, but they were great lovers of the arts. And we grew up on 12th Street, and ever since I was a youngin', my parents would take me uptown to see opera and ballet and Broadway and the fine arts, if you will. And then as soon as I was allowed out of the house on my own, I was going downtown to places like CBGB's and the old Danceteria and the old Ritz, and I was seeing punk rock shows, and there were also venues like La Mama, experimental theater houses, and so I was also exposed to sort of the avant-garde arts. So I really grew up with a very well-rounded sense of the possibilities of art. And in addition to that, my grandfather was a very, very big influence on my life professionally. He was a serial entrepreneur, mostly based in Guyana, South America, and in parts of the Caribbean. But he always told me that you need to work for yourself and you need to do what you love. And, you know, I think he thought working for yourself included working for the family business. But for me, it pushed me away from the family business and towards the arts, because the arts is what I love. So I suppose that had always been my dream, and it was really just a matter of pursuing that dream over the course of business school and then afterwards.
So you've had some major successes that have blended both business and arts. Tell us a little bit about what some of them are.
Yeah, I mean, I guess, you know, I started my career working in the music industry. After I graduated from the Wharton School, I was working for Mercury Records for a number of years. And while I was pursuing my Wharton degree, I was working part-time for Sony Music. But after I left the music industry, you know, having grown up, as I mentioned earlier, with a sort of well-rounded sense of the possibilities of art, I started my own company, and I knew that I wanted to work not just in music, but kind of across the artistic spectrum. Being based in New York City, I thought that I should start with Broadway, because Broadway was in my backyard, whereas a lot of the film and television industries, for example, are in Los Angeles. So I decided to focus on Broadway, and I found myself networking and getting in touch with some of the producers who were lead producing The Producers, the Mel Brooks musical. And they took me under their wing in sort of a mentoring capacity, and that was the first show that I worked on. I will be honest that I mostly kept my mouth shut and my eyes and ears open, and I learned how to produce from that show. I did raise some money for it, so I did earn my place at the table, but it was truly a learning experience. And if you follow Broadway, you know that show was a tremendous success and was a great show to learn from. And that kind of launched my career on Broadway, and most recently I was a lead producer on Green Day's American Idiot and on The Addams Family. I was a producer on A Raisin in the Sun, which I'm very proud of, and right now I'm working with Alanis Morissette to adapt her album Jagged Little Pill for the stage, which should also be a very exciting project coming down the pike.
So you've actually mentioned a few points that we hear quite often, which are you had someone growing up who was a successful entrepreneur as a role model, who was close to you, who imparted the message that entrepreneurship has its value. You also, in your early working life, found someone or maybe multiple people who were able to mentor you. And also, you spent a lot of time listening and learning.
Yeah, you know, I mean, if I had to kind of boil down like my my top, you know, advice to people pursuing, you know, their dreams, really. It's, you know, it's hold on to your passions with persistence, but also, you know, that doesn't mean you can't get a ton of help. You know, find yourself role models, mentors, and teachers. To me, that has always been, it was my grandfather that encouraged me to pursue entrepreneurship. It was the producers that got launched me in theater. And, you know, my main project these days is a book and a forthcoming film about Brian Epstein, who was the Beatles manager. And he died in 1967, and I was born in 1973, so I didn't even get to know him. But I pursued a study of his life, because his life has been very inspiring to me, both personally and professionally. And I call him my historical mentor, you know, someone whose life who's somebody who I never got to meet, but somebody whose life I've looked to learn from. I believe that role models and mentors, whether they are living, breathing folks, or whether they're, putting it bluntly, dead folks who are can be historical mentors, I believe that's the lifeblood of a successful career path.
Mm-hmm. So what are some of the, for someone who hasn't been so successful at garnering a cadre of mentors, what kind of tips do you have to get started?
Well, I mean, you know, this might sound a little unconventional, but I really do believe in this concept of the sort of historical mentor. And, you know, the obvious downside of a historical mentor is that they're no longer alive, so you can't sit down with them and get very specific advice and have a back and forth discussion. But the upside to a historical mentor is they can't say no, you know. So really, you know, being very very blunt about it, I don't think there's no excuse for someone not to have a historical mentor. You know, figure out what it is that you're passionate about, and then if you can't find people who can help you in your day-to-day life, then turn to the history books. You know, if you're passionate about politics and you run for your local office a few times and it's not successful, then maybe you need to study the life of Abraham Lincoln, and you'll learn that he ran for president a number of times and lost spectacularly before he was finally voted in. Maybe that story will be inspiring to you. If you're a young woman who's looking to be an athlete and looking for, and you can't find inspiration around you, then maybe you study the life of Amelia Earhart and the challenges that she overcame to break records in her field. I mean, you know, I'm making these up, but that's what you do. You know, I was a young person of Indian origin who wanted to pursue a career in the arts and entertainment. And while my family included a mentor figure in my grandfather, who was an incredibly successful businessman, he didn't do anything in the arts. I mean, the core competencies of the family businesses revolved around food products and finance, and automotive to a lesser extent, but nothing related to the arts. And so, being a lifelong Beatles fan, I turned studying the life of the guy that managed the Beatles. I believe that the Beatles kind of rewrote the textbook on pop music, and that I could learn a lot from studying his life. So, you know, I really do encourage, I think there's no excuse for someone who can't find a living, breathing mentor to find a historical mentor, especially in this day and age of the internet. You know, I mean, when I began my study of Brian Epstein, that was 21 years ago, there was no Wikipedia, there was no Google, there was no YouTube, there were none of these resources we take for granted today. So I literally have to track down people who knew him and ask them to talk to me about him. But today, you can just hop online and do a search and learn, and at least get your study off to a good start just by you know, with an internet connection. So that would be my top piece of advice: is if you can't find mentors around you, find a historical mentor.
Who are some of the mentors who have been helpful to you in person? What kinds of people?
Well, my grandfather, I mentioned, was certainly my first mentor. There were a number of producers in theater that have been mentors to me over the years. You know, in the comics industry, which is the industry I'm operating quite deeply in now through the Fifth Beatle, there are a number of folks who've been very mentoring to me, including Paul Levitz, who is the former head of DC Comics, Janet Berger, who is the former head of DC Vertigo, There's just been a number of people. I mean, I guess I don't really believe in having one particular mentor. I believe in having like a group of people who can advise and inspire you on a number of very specific areas, if that makes sense.
Yeah. How have you been successful at connecting with them?
You know, I mean, it's really, in all the cases where I've had living, breathing mentors, it's been very organic. You know, I find that going out there and trying to seek a mentor, you know, sort of sitting down with somebody and saying, you've really inspired me, you know, would you be my mentor, that sort of thing. And I know it does happen sometimes, but I find that that's a very, for me, that's never worked. I find that people are too busy to take that sort of, to be able to take on that sort of more immediate ask. At least the kind of people who can be most educational to you, you know, typically don't have the time to just meet someone and say, sure, I'll be your mentor. But, you know, organically you meet these people through networking and they're impressed with what you're doing and you ask some intelligent questions and then all of a sudden you've developed a relationship where a year later you look back and you say, gosh, that person's been a mentor to me. I mean, all those names that I just spouted out to you, I think a number of them would be surprised to hear that I called them my mentor, because we developed a friendship and it was a friendship through which I wound up learning a lot.
That's interesting. Vivek, along the way in your own career, are there places where you've hit roadblocks?
You know, it's funny, I get asked this question sometimes, and for me, you know, I guess I don't really believe in roadblocks, and I know this is going to sound very sort of new agey self-help, but I believe that there is no such thing as a roadblock. There are only opportunities and learning experiences. You know, I feel that if you're pursuing your dreams and you're working in fields that you're passionate about, you know, anything that comes in your way that is a roadblock is really just it's just a part of the path, and you got to figure out, how do I get over this stumbling block? Why am I not able to achieve what it is that I'm trying to achieve here? And that's just part of the journey. You know, I feel like it's not a roadblock. It's just it's an opportunity for education. So, you know, you got to teach yourself how to get to the next step. And I think the minute you start thinking of things as roadblocks, you're building walls. You know, I mean, that's all psychological.
Mm-hmm. Have you discovered solutions that you were surprised by?
I feel like along the way, you know, the number of issues that I've had, I've either found a way to accomplish what I've been trying to accomplish through just diligence and persistence and keep beating on doors, or I found a workaround. You know, if I can't get a band a record deal that I'm working with, then maybe we should put out our own record. You know, leaning back on the do-it-yourself approach. You know, with the Fifth Beatle, you know, rather than looking for a publishing deal, we decided we were going to make the book independently and then look for a publisher. That's always been my mentality, is try to do things as much as you can yourself.
Yeah, you know, you actually raised an interesting point, which is when you're working on something, sometimes it makes sense to try to do things as much as possible with the resources you currently have, and other times it makes sense to try to bring on some new resources and to increase the collaboration. How do you know?
I am a big believer in doing as much of it, as much of whatever it is you're trying to accomplish yourself, which doesn't mean you shouldn't constantly be looking for help and partners. You just shouldn't be waiting for that help or those partners before attempting whatever it is that you want to accomplish. You should be doing both simultaneously. Mm-hmm. You know, if you want a record deal, you should be thinking about how you put out your own record while looking for a record label partner. You know, if you want to write a book, you should start writing the book while waiting. You know, don't wait for a publisher to give you permission, or, you know, if you can afford to operate without an advance, just get started and then hope that the advance will come. You know, I really am a big believer in just diving headfirst into things, but also constantly trying to get as much help as you can.
Which means you're working on Plan A and Plan B simultaneously.
Yeah, where, you know, I don't know that I'd even necessarily call it Plan A and Plan B, but just you have multiple Plan A's, and, you know, just and you work equally hard at all of them, and whichever one takes off first, that's the one where you might readjust your priorities and spend more time on that plan. I think it's much more useful to have, you know, to figure out a number of ways to accomplish, you know, that you think are strong ways to reach your goal, and just work hard at all of them, rather than to think of like, let me try this, and if that doesn't work, let me try that, and if that doesn't work, let me try this third thing. Better to have three things and work intensely at all three of them, and then right. figure out which one of those three is looking like there's more traction.
Do you think that some people who do that end up spreading themselves too thin and get too overwhelmed, and it prevents them from actually making progress?
Sure. I mean, that is always the risk, you know, and I think that's where getting help comes into play. You know, you have to figure out what can you delegate, you know, and again, I guess it's like, how much can you do? Certainly, you know, if you can't do all three things, then maybe you do need to pick one or two. But you know, maybe there's also ways that you can surround yourself by people who can ease the burden.
Vivek, what have been some of the hardest things that you've tried to do in your life?
Well, you know, I mean, this is the main thing that I'm working on these days, is The Fifth Beatle, and it's a book and soon to be a feature film based on the life of the Beatles manager. And, you know, for the film, we had to secure Beatles music rights. And that's a process that literally took me 3.5 years. We're the first and only biographical film about Beatles history to have ever gotten those rights. So that was something that that was very difficult to accomplish and was really a challenge. And then the book, you know, just the heart of the project, just researching it. As I mentioned earlier, when I began this research 21 years ago, there was no Wikipedia, there was no YouTube, there was no Google. You know, I had none of these immediate online resources that we have today, and I literally just had to track down people who knew Brian Epstein, pull out the phone book, and figure out which of these people were in driving distance, and cold call them and just say, I'm a student at the Wharton School, I'm looking for inspiration and education, will you meet with me? And the truth is, I was so excited about contacting those people that I forgot to be intimidated. And I just dove in head first, and literally not one of them turned me down. You know, a few of them might have raised their eyebrows at first and maybe wanted to make sure that I was who I said I was, which was, you know, a Wharton student looking for inspiration. But once they believed that I was being honest, you know, literally not one of them turned me down. But that was also, you know, to use a Beatles lyric, it was a long and winding road. You know, everything about The Fifth Beatle has been a challenge, but it's a passion project. And So, you know, to go back to something we were discussing earlier, none of those things felt like roadblocks. They all felt like, you know, opportunities for education. And if you enjoy what you're doing and you're passionate about it, you know, it's not to say that there won't be days that are stressful, but it should all, at the end of the day, still be fun work. You should be enjoying what you do.
Well, you mentioned earlier that persistence is really important, even when you're passionate about something.
Absolutely. Absolutely. I mean, it's one thing to say chase your dreams, but you also need to be persistent about it. It's, you know, the dreams that I had, you know, so many times people are saying that dream is crazy or that dream is impossible or people like you don't do those sorts of things. And you just need to keep at it. You need to keep being persistent about it. I mean, this is where the Brian Epstein model, you know, the Beatles manager has been so inspiring to me. I mean, apart from all the amazing things he did for the Beatles, you know, he got them a record deal when no one wanted to sign them. He came up with the suits and the haircuts. He convinced Ed Sullivan to book them when a British band had never made an impact in the United States. These are all business accomplishments, and all these things are fascinating stories, and they're have been inspiring to me, and they're all covered in my book. But truly, the heart of why Brian Epstein became my historical mentor actually had nothing to do with the business specifics. It was the human side of his story. And, you know, putting it in brief, he was gay and Jewish and from Liverpool. And in the 1960s, those were three significant obstacles. It was against the law to be gay. It was literally a felony. There was a rampant anti-Semitism in the country, far more than there is today. And while this might sound strange to modern ears, Jews did not work extensively in the music industry, especially not in the United Kingdom, where it was run by folks like Sir Lew Grade and Sir Joseph Lockwood, you know, very Christian knights of the British Empire. And Liverpool, prior to the Beatles, was not a town that had any cultural influence whatsoever. But literally, Brian Epstein is this gay Jewish kid. He was 26 years old, running around a dirty old port town in the north of England, saying things like, I found a local rock and roll band, and they are going to elevate pop music into an art form. They're going to be bigger than Elvis. I mean, people thought he was crazy. You know, they said that dream is stupid. You know, it's impossible. And moreover, people like you don't do things like that. And you know, for a young person of Indian origin, you know, people of my ethnicity we're steered towards engineering, medicine, technology. You know, we don't go into writing comic books and producing Broadway musicals. You know, so to have a role model of somebody who just pursued their dreams and did it, you know, after repeatedly being told, you can't do this, you shouldn't do this, or whatever it is you want to do is impossible, you know, that was a very powerful model for me to have. You know, and I want to be honest, I don't think I've ever faced in my life the obstacles that Brian Epstein faced. I can't imagine what it would be like to be gay at a time where literally you're told your sexuality is illegal. But nevertheless, I could really relate to those emotional beats, the sense of being an outsider in your chosen field. You know, so it really is the human side of Brian's story that has been so mentoring to me in my professional life.
You know, you've touched on a really important point, which is being passionate about something and having the mindset to pursue it when the vast majority of people you know are telling you that you're crazy.
Absolutely. I love it. I got to tell you, for me, and I believe this is a smart thing for any entrepreneur, part of the trick to being successful is being able to, every time somebody tells you you're crazy, to be able to turn that into an exciting challenge. You know, I love it when people tell me something is crazy or it can't be done, because that just gives me more fuel to prove that I'm right and that they're wrong.
And then how do you feel when you're right?
Look, I mean, you know, we're human beings, right? I mean, by nature, we enjoy being right. But you know, I've learned you just can't get too cocky about things. You know, it's and you never burn a bridge. I mean, like, you know, there have been a number of people that have told me, you know, that idea is crazy or whatever, and I've enjoyed proving them wrong, because those people will come back to me if I've developed a good relationship with them, and they'll say, hey, you know, you were right about that, you know, and so let me know about the next project you're working on. You know, you were right about A Raisin in the Sun. You know, I didn't think that African Americans would come to Broadway, and you were right. So next time you have a crazy idea, like you want to put a punk rock album on Broadway, let me know. And then all of a sudden, somebody who turned me down to invest in A Raisin in the Sun is more than willing to give me money for American Idiots. You know,
it's funny how it works that way.
Yeah, and it's important to do that. You know, you know the thing you should not do is go back to that person and say and rub it in their face and say, you were an idiot. See, look what I did. Look what I proved you wrong. You know, it's not about that. It's not about the joy of being right. It's, you know, I mean, certainly there's a part of that. As I said, we're human beings. But, you know, when you're right, you let everybody you know that you're right, because it opens up doors. It opens up opportunities, you know, not because you want to be cocky and you know, and just for the sake of being right, just for the sake of being right, you know.
I also think it helps your own confidence when you're going on to the next thing that you're doing, where everybody else is telling you you're crazy, and you go, well, okay, they think I'm crazy, but I know it's right. The last thing I did, everybody else said I was crazy. I knew I was right. It worked. I'm okay.
You know, it's you know, when I was chasing the Beatles music rights and I got them, and people have always asked, like, you know, how do you think you got them? And to be honest, like, I don't know exactly. It's not as though, you know, they told me you can have them and here are the reasons why we finally decided to say yes. But I suspect, and this is just my instincts and my opinion, that part of the reason is because, you know, I had a mixture of heart being in the right place, as well as a track record of pulling off tricky projects. You know, I suspect that they get a lot of young people who have really passionate ideas for telling aspects of the Beatles history, but they're kids with no track record of pulling it off. You know, or they get, you know, major producers or majorly successful business people in the arts and entertainment who have a great idea to cash in on something Beatles related, but it's not a labor of love, and it's not going to be worth it for them to chase music rights for 3 years, you know. And I think I was an unusual mixture of the two. The Brian Epstein story is something that's very personal to me, and that's something I'm incredibly passionate about. And when you look at my track record of what I've done, it's not just that I've been successful, but I've been successful with projects that are not intuitive, that are really hard to pull off, you know, like casting an African American rap star in a Broadway musical, in a Broadway play, and putting a punk rock album on a Broadway stage. You know, the number of people who said that those things were crazy ideas was extreme, and you know, I proved that I could pull off tricky projects, and I could prove that I had my heart in the right place. And I really do think those are two very important things to anyone who wants to chase a tricky dream or to be an entrepreneur.
That's great.
And by the way, you asked me earlier about linear paths, and let me say, like, you know, it's clear that I love what I do, and I love, you know, approaching something that people say is crazy and it's impossible, and I love proving them wrong. I mean, that's just who I am. You know, there's nothing wrong with wanting to do something that is linear and that isn't crazy, you know? I mean, in many ways, I wish that I did pursue projects that made a little bit more sense intuitively right off the cuff, and that, you know, there's nothing wrong with that. You know, just because your project might make immediate sense, or you might not be rocking the boat too much with your dreams, like, God bless you. You know, that doesn't, you know, I don't want to suggest to anyone who's listening in the audience that you need to be a rabble rouser, or you need to have crazy dreams or anything like that to be passionate. It's just as important to be passionate about something that's very linear as it is to be passionate about something that might take a more, again, long and winding road, to use a Beatles reference.
Right. No, I couldn't agree more. Vivek, are you willing to share any thoughts about what might be coming down the pike for you after this next project is done?
Well, you know, The Fifth Beatle, you know, is, I think, you know, it's been a graphic novel. It's been, it came out last year, and I've been very proud that it's become a New York Times bestseller and just won the Will Eisner Award, which is literally the comic industry's version of the Academy Award. So it's been very critically received and is selling well, and we're adapting it into a film. So that is the next stage. But, you know, I really don't know that The Fifth Beatle will ever be something that's over the way you might think, okay, the film is done, so maybe then the project will be over. You know, I think of The Fifth Beatle as an entity. Maybe you could think of it as a corporate entity if you must, whose mission is to sing the unsung story of Brian Epstein, you know, to champion his legacy and to share a story that's been incredibly inspiring to me with the world. And if I can do that through a graphic novel, great. If I can do it through a film, great. If I can do it through this interview, great. You know, when the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame inducted him this year, they called me and asked me to consult with them on some issues about Brian Epstein that they were trying to clarify. And to me, that was fulfilling the mission of The Fifth Beatle. So I suspect that project, you know, will never really end per se. It'll just take on different applications, and those may be very easy to understand, like maybe after the film there'll be a stage version, or they might maybe more esoteric. They may be more doing interviews and talks and speeches and about Brian. I'm not quite sure, but I don't know that it's going to end in that way. But other outside of The Fifth Beatle, I mentioned briefly, I think, that I'm working with Alanis Morissette on adapting her album Jagged Little Pill for the stage, which I'm very, very excited about. You know, sort of taking a page from the rule book that we created with American Idiot, we're adapting another very important kind of coming of age record to the stage. Only this one has a very strong female voice, which I think is a very underserviced or unheard voice on Broadway. And so, so I'm very glad and proud to be working on that project. And you know, I wrote The Fifth Beatle book, and I've written The Fifth Beatle screenplay, and I've really enjoyed the writing process. And I guess since we've been winning awards, people think I'm good at it. and so I will say that the majority of projects that you're going to see coming down the pike for me are going to be writing projects. You know, it's a new career area that I intend to really be focusing on is my writing. So hopefully you'll be seeing a lot from me as an author in the coming years. And well, certainly, if anybody wants to keep tabs on what I'm working on, I'm very active on Twitter at Vivek J. Tiwari. Company website is tiwarient.com. And similarly, Fifth Beatle can be found at Fifth Beatle. And we're also on Facebook, and we're on the website at fifthbeatle.com as well.
Wow, this is all very exciting. Well, Vivek, the conversation I found very inspirational, particularly how you have pursued your own passion. And I think people will learn a lot from hearing how you've pursued your passion against what many people would think are lots of challenges. So thank you for sharing your thoughts with us. Unfortunately, we're coming close to the end of our interview, and we believe that one of the most vital elements to smash through any plateau in business or life is to create a community of complementary people with complementary talents, along the lines of many of the things we've discussed, which is why we always end our interviews with this question. Who do you know who right now is currently doing work you're especially excited about, and why?
Oh, gosh. That is a really great question. I mean, there's a number of people across the artistic spectrums that are doing interesting work, but
then it doesn't have to be in the artistic spectrum either.
Right. Oh gosh. Well, this might sound a little self-serving as well, but so in full disclosure, I will say that she is my wife, but Dr. Tracy Dennis, my wife, who is a professor and a scientist at Hunter College, operating in the field of neuroscience, is developing a suite of apps that that are scientifically proven to reduce stress and to deal with psychological problems. She believes, as a scientist, that the scientific community has failed the public, in the sense that mental health treatments are considered stigmatizing, and they're too expensive, and they're too difficult to, so they're inaccessible, or they're stigmatizing. And so she's creating a suite of mobile games and other applications that are free, and that are easy to use and that are scientifically proven to work. The first is called Personal Zen. And it's downloadable on the iTunes Store, and it's also at personalzen.com. And I think that people who are operating in that field, you know, trying to use technology to remove stigmas and to really provide mental health treatments are incredibly inspiring. My wife's not the only person operating in that field, but I'm proud to say she's at the forefront of it.
That's great. It does sound very inspiring. Vivek, thank you for taking the time to join us today on Smashing the Plateau. My guest today has been Vivek Tiwari, who is the president and CEO at Tiwari Entertainment Group. Thank you again, Vivek, for joining us.
Thank you so much for having me. It's been a pleasure to talk to you.
You've been listening to Smashing the Plateau, the podcast produced by 10 Strategic Partners. Be sure to visit our website at smashingtheplateau.com and join our email list to hear many more great interviews like this one. And if you like what you heard, please leave us a review on iTunes by going to smashingtheplateau.com/iTunes. I'm your host, David Schreiner-Kahn, and we'll be talking again soon.